Hey people, I gotta take a second to tell you about something we do around here called the THC Money Bomb. What I do is every 5 episodes, I total up the donations I've gotten in that period of time, and half keeps me and the show going. I take the other half and I gift that back to a random listener. So far we're hitting about 500 each round and I couldn't be happier about it. So consider throwing in 5 or 10 bucks. It's cheaper than a hand at the blackjack table with better odds than a scratch-off ticket. Plus, you know half supports a show you like, and at the very least, half will go to a like-minded person who could probably use a nice surprise in these troubled times. When you make a donation, I can see your email address, and that's how I pick the winner. But to keep things kosher, you can also get in the pool by sending your info on a postcard to me, Greg Carlwood, P.O. Box 635223, San Diego, California, 92163. I got no subscription fees here, no paid archives, no paid bonus shows, and I want to keep it that way, on principle. But I'm not a millionaire at the podcast on the side. This is it for me. And I'm the only one I know who's trying to help the people out as well.
That's my man!
So help me help you. If you want to play along, go to thehiresidechats.com/donate and get in the game. Dollars, bitcoins, it's all good to me. And that's what we call the THC Money Bomb. Boom.
In the 1930s, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt addressed the nation through a series of radio broadcasts known as the Fireside Chats. His aim was to reassure the common man that our society would recover from its troubled times. But we're far from 1930, and I deal with a different kind of fire. For a new era of worldly frustration, we offer a fresh conversation. I'm Greg Carlwood, and these are the Fireside Chats.
All right, Ironside Chatters, drinking a little drink, smoking a little smoke from San Diego. I'm Greg Carlwood, and man, have I gotten a lot of emails and messages about the last show. Have to congratulate me on shedding the 9-to-5, which I loved. Thank you, everyone. I hope you can all find your freedom as well. And then half telling me how wrong Michael Rupert is. Wow, the overwhelming majority thought he was super negative and had all sorts of problems with the Rupert perspective. But I like the guy, and I think overall, he's just in a place of acceptance rather than trying to change the world's habits. And I can't blame him. He's been fighting that fight a long time. Now that I've regained my freedom, I should be able to put out more THCs, and I would have had one before this, which would have been cool. I had been talking to a guy who set a few Guinness Book records for traveling, and he's been to every country on the planet, but he didn't like that the show is labeled a conspiracy show, and he wanted me to sign some document that said I wouldn't edit the show, and if he didn't like how it turned out, he would retain the rights to pull it, and I just couldn't lose control of the THC ship like that. So fuck that guy. Go watch Discovery Channel and you'll get just about the same thing. I've interviewed so many people, almost 100 in the show at this point. No one's ever asked me something like that. I've had Judge Jim Gray, the vice presidential nominee for the Libertarian ticket, in the middle of the campaign, and he didn't even ask about editing or controlling the content. But anyway, as for the money bomb, people, this is the biggest one so far. Thank you for all the donations. We're at $762, which means I'm giving away at least $380 to someone. That's a big amount of money. Biggest one yet, again. So thanks, and you can still donate up until Saturday the 22nd for this round. I'm going to have to pick a winner on Sunday. And if you donate after that, well, it's just going to start the next round. So no worries. And I just want to get into this episode. You know, I don't like long intros, but this is a little bit of a different kind of THC. Our main man, Freeman Fly, was in a new movie called Don Peyote, the brainchild of Dan Fogler, who's an actor. I'm sure a lot of you have seen in movies before. And this movie follows the main character's path down the conspiracy rabbit hole. And then he gets inspired to film interviews with conspiracy researchers and authors, which is exactly what I do. So they were cool enough to send me a screener for the movie. I liked it, but the one I saw had a lot of effects and narration missing, so I think the final movie is going to be even better. Dan came on the show to talk about the movie and his path of awakening and psychedelics and fucking Star Wars and Christopher Walken, and it's good fun. Maybe after such a heavy episode with Michael Rupert, we needed something a bit lighter. But I've got a lot of great shows coming out in March. I'm booked solid. We're going in some weird places. And thanks to everybody for sticking with me on this trip. I'm not going to waste any more time. Let's do the damn thing with Dan Fogler.
All
All right, people, you and I both know that the Hollywood film medium is a powerful tool of influence generally used by the elite to distract and pacify the masses in between the mind-numbing 9-to-5 shifts at the office, because who has the time or energy for a revolution when there's this new RoboCop movie out? But the 35mm knife cuts both ways, and some people are tenacious enough to use that powerful medium to inform and inspire people in these troubled times. Today's guest is just such a guy. Dan Fogler, a genuine actor that you've seen in classics such as Good Luck Chuck, Balls of Fury, and Fanboys, has used some of his Hollywood capital to write, direct, produce, and star in a new movie that draws attention to the conspiracy world and the Path of Awakening called Don Peyote. I know I'm psyched to have him here, the pimp of pimps, Dan fucking Fogler. How the hell are you, man?
Man, that was an amazing intro. Holy shit.
Thanks.
You should do, like, commercials or something, man.
I'd love to.
Did you write that out? That was fantastic.
Yeah, of course. If that was off the cuff, then I should be, I don't know, somewhere else.
But
thanks for doing it, man. I mean, I know our mutual friend Freeman Fly sort of set us up together, and he's shared an almost finished version of the movie with me, which he's also in, and I thought it was pretty cool. A little bit Fear and Loathing, a little bit Alice in Wonderland, but... You know, why don't you give the people the cliff notes to the story? What's this thing about, man?
Oh, that's delightful. Yeah, I like the Fear and Loathing reference. yeah, all of the above. I mean, the movie is essentially the modern prophet journey. Okay, so you have this, I play this guy named Warren Allman, who is about to get married right before 2012.
Mm-hmm.
So he's got a lot of stress. he's worried. You know, a lot of people around him were telling him that something big was going to happen. Maybe it was the end. But definitely change was coming. And he just gets wrapped up in that, and he just needs to get the answer. Like, what the hell is coming? I'm about to get married. I'm about to have a family. Like,
right?
Like, what the hell? What am I getting myself into? Should I move to, like, Costa Rica? Like, what the hell? You know, he's in the heart of New York. And so he's this kind of everyman. You know, he has no purpose until he bumps into this, and this near guy with his sign, you know, walking down the street, who is, you know, the street prophet. He bumps into this guy, and he gets so obsessed with, you know, what that is, you know, what's coming, what the hell is Planet X, you know, what, you know, where he starts collecting all of these, this information. He's just collecting interviews like Freeman and Daniel Pinchbeck and, you know, all these people that are in the movie. And, you know, he just goes to all these, it's a very simple journey. He goes to all these wise men to ask them for their advice. What should he do? And he goes through the 7 steps of preparation. You know, first he is just like, I don't know how many steps, it just says 7, but he starts with the anxiety, like, oh my god, it's too much, oh my god, the rabbit hole is so fucking deep, it's crazy,
yeah.
I'm scared out of my mind. And then he starts to say, okay, I'm going to take control. So he starts talking to different kind of people, like people who would help him with self-defense and people who would help him to protect his family. And then he's like, you know, no, it's, it, then he goes to the phase of, no, it's about, you know, compassion and love. And then he starts going on that road and, and somewhere in the middle, he goes nuts. You know, he gets so overwhelmed with fear and what to do, and the unknown, that he goes off the deep end and he becomes, you know, this prophet, Don Peyote, you know, street prophet, trying to preach peace and love and, you know, to the masses and try to turn the tide toward a change. And he's like the 100th monkey, you know, he's trying to herald the shift in consciousness. So that's the movie in a nutshell. And it's got an amazing cast. And, making the movie was pretty life-changing.
Yeah. I mean, you've done a lot of acting, but, I mean, you were pretty involved in this. I mean, you wrote, direct, produced, and starred in it. I mean, this isn't just Kung Fu Panda 2. You know, you put a lot of effort into this.
This is my baby, because, you know, I made another film called Hysterical Psycho, and that was just kind of like, I was just dabbling. I was like, oh, it would be fun to direct something with my friends. And then I really got kind of bitten by the bug, and this was back in 2010, and I was turning 33, and I was kind of having my, you know, like, existential year, you know, and I started questioning. Really, it started with, I've always been a fan of conspiracy. I love the Oliver Stone movies, and I kind of got into it through JFK. Like, whoa, that's, you know, that was my conspiracy 101 was that movie. And, and it really brought a whole layered perspective to how our government works. And, oh my God, you know, like, you know, that's the president, you know, that got murdered. And
right.
Why is there such a huge conspiracy around it that they have to bury it for fucking 50 years? Like, well, you know, and then I had my own special one, my own special conspiracy, which happened in my fucking backyard, which was 9/11. And that was just crazy.
Yeah, you were in New York at the time, right?
I was about 15 blocks away from it at the time.
Good God.
I was, yeah, 15, 20 blocks away. So I saw it. You know, I could look out my window and see what the hell was going on. It was surreal. And I just remember sitting on the bed and looking at the TV, just like everybody else, you know, who was like kind of shocked. Absolutely. Like, I felt it, you know, felt the shockwave. It woke me up, and I turned on the TV, and I'm watching the broadcast like everybody else, and then I saw, like, certain discrepancies, because I was fucking watching it with my own eyes, you know, and I was like, wait, no, what? What do you mean it fell down already? Like, it's right there.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But at any angle, whether you were watching it actually happen, or you were watching it on TV, or both at the same time, in my heart... in my gut, I was like, wait, that doesn't fucking look right. It just doesn't look right. You're telling me, like, and instantly in my brain, I went to Sesame Street when I was a little kid and, like, watching them teach me, you know, up and down. And there was a construction guy, and he would do a controlled demolition on some building, and he hit a button. And they'd reverse it, and they'd play it forward and reverse it and go up, down, up, down. I remember that as a kid. That was ingrained in my head. And then I saw what was going on with the towers, and I said, what the fuck? Is this up, down right now? Like, they're expecting us to buy this? And then, you know, I had that feeling right away.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people did. And then it wasn't... I would turn to people and say, you know, yeah, everyone, like, question this. Like, think about the physics of that. Just a mash. Is that possible that happened just by having planes hit the building? Mm-hmm. And, you know, and everyone just seemed to have bought the math of it. And then it wasn't until I saw Loose Change where I was like, holy shit, this fucking kid has dissected the whole situation here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there's a lot of people out there. And then over time, it's become mainstream, you know, this questioning. And then I started, because of this questioning, you know, there's like, you know, I was looking on Netflix, and there's a couple different versions of Loose Change now.
True.
So there were just so many different people out there, enough people. And I started to wonder, like, wow, you know, am I gonna digest that? Am I just going to let that go?
Yeah, it's tough.
Okay, even if there's a 50% chance that that's a possibility that they just use this as cannon fodder, they just use citizens like they were garbage. If they just did that, is that the kind of place I want to live in? And I think it's kind of a patriotic duty to try to get to the bottom of that.
Of course, man. Isn't it kind of funny that 9/11 truther has become a term, like a negative term, like wanting the truth is something to be scoffed at?
Oh, yeah. Everyone wants to keep the status quo. And they've done very well in converting us into sheep, where someone gives you all the information, many different angles, you know, and they tell you, look, there are some discrepancies here, and they open up the gate, and they said, let's come on, run to the other side with me, and they just stay there because they get their, you know, grass every day, they get their, you know, injection, whatever the fuck they need to stay healthy, you know, and so that's where we're at, and I'm there, you know, I know all this shit, and I'm not picking up my family running because I'm lazy. No, because I kind of learned through this that you really have a lot of control as an individual.
You do.
Just by the way you think.
Yeah.
And if you think that the shit house is going to go up in flames, then the shit house will go up in flames. But if you think that, no, everything will be cool, and if you can surf this chaos, it's kind of fun, then you can get by, you know?
Well, man, obviously with a name like Don Peyote, which is a pretty good name. I love that name.
Yeah.
Psychedelics play a huge role in Warren's awakening in the movie, but did you have any similar experiences that opened your eyes in a similar way?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, the pineal gland, I hope it's not a vestigial organ.
It's a powerful gland.
Yeah, but people talk about how it's not gone, obviously. We still have it for some reason. It should be used, but people, I think there's been research that it's gotten smaller over the centuries,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
because of lack of use. So that sounds like devolving to me, I guess. Right. I don't know what that is.
Some people in the conspiracy world also suggest that the fluoridation of water helps to calcify the pineal. Who knows how much truth there is to it, but that's definitely a popular thought.
No, it's definitely a popular thought, yeah. And I think it's a combination, you know, it's like the Joker in the first Batman movie, you know, he's like combining all of these different elements
to
poison everybody. I think that's what's going on. I think there's a mixture of, different elements that try to help control population, I think. I think it helps keep us less sexually active. It may even sterilize some people, and it definitely, I think, tries to cloud us, to subdue us.
Yeah.
And it's worked. And TV and movies are a huge part of that. It's a very powerful spell that they have cast on us. And it's an interesting universe that they have laid out for us. You know, it's a fun video game that we're playing here.
Yeah.
But there's a lot more to it than just stacking up bills and fucking as much as you can and eating as much as you can. And it's fun, but there's, I think a lot of our prophets throughout the years have talked about looking within yourself and finding the connection to everything and thus, you know, connecting to the collective and gaining so much information where you feel like you're one with everything. And I mean, that is really, that's the unexplored territory. Fuck the ocean. You know,
they're doing that too. They're fucking the ocean too. Don't worry.
They're fucking everything. But I think that if more people started meditation and started
mushrooms,
on that tip, I think that stuff like THC and mushrooms and stuff with psilocybin keep the pineal gland nice and greased up and working.
Yeah.
I think that it's imperative. I think that it's a part of our evolution. I think that there was some hairy ass fucking ape several eons ago that picked up some interesting mushrooms and that started our path to evolution.
Terrence McKenna's theory.
Yeah, man. I think that there's something to that because direct experience influences the shape of your brain. You know, you look at Einstein's brain and it's like a whole other fucking thing. You know, it looks, it's got a different shape. So, yes, I totally believe that our pineal gland is here for to be used for a reason. And I'm pretty sure the majority of the population doesn't know how to fucking use it. They have like a DeLorean, you know, with a flux capacitor in their head, and they don't know how to fucking start it.
Yeah, they're scared of it.
Yeah, and I'm scared of it, man, because I've had tastes of what it looks like, and it's pretty frightening. And you know, I'm curious about DMT.
Oh, yeah.
I've done shrooms, and I've smoked pot, and I think that pot is kind of the lubrication for getting your chakras aligned.
Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah, man. I'm an advocate of such things, because it's, you know, the dream molecule. I mean, come on, I'm an artist and mm-hmm. trying to experiment with the dream molecule sounds like the fucking coolest thing on the face of the earth. So it's great because DMT is like, oh my God, DMT, but it's like, it's found. I think it's like when you're born, there's a tremendous amount of it in your brain. When you die, there's a tremendous amount. And it seeps out when you go to sleep at night.
And
there's like, you know, everyone knows that there's a huge pharmacy of chemicals already in their brain that if they just knew how to activate it, you wouldn't need any drugs.
Right.
So
a lot of those Zen spiritualist masters, there's a famous story of one guy who was going, he was studying with some Buddhist monks, and he was doing huge amounts of LSD, and he was giving it to this monk. And this monk is taking like 3-4 times the dose that most people could take. And he's like, what? He's like, this is how I live, man. I live in this framework.
Right.
It's a lot harder to do all the spiritual work, though. It's a lot easier to just dive in with some mushrooms.
Well, check it out. The most blissful, like crazy high I ever had. And I think, you know, everyone's trying to find, I don't know what heroin's like.
Not yet.
But, no, I'm fucking with you. Yeah, no, I know. No, I'm more of the natural kind of. I'm on the side of the natural shelf there.
Yeah.
But I don't like all the pills and the chemicals. But although ecstasy was pretty amazing, and I met my wife on ecstasy. So,
dude, me too.
Really?
The girl that I'm with right now. We had both wanted to try it. And my buddy, whose name happens to be Romeo, gave us ecstasy. A friend of mine who's very spiritual was like, look, you got the magic love pill from Romeo. This is meant to be.
Crazy, man.
And I advise it to anybody in a relationship.
Yeah, same thing. That's amazing, man. Whoa.
Synchronistic. Yeah,
that's another synchronicity because, and over the course of this movie, I've learned to kind of like, be baffled and amazed by synchronicity, and now I'm at the point where I'm just like, yeah, synchronicity as usual. It's like Speed Levitch is in the movie, and he kind of coined the phrase. He's from Waking Life, and he coins the phrase, synchronicity as usual. You know, it's like, I love that phrase because it's fucking magical, and when I see it happen, if you're on the right path. They happen more and more, and so many happen during the course of the movie. And then when you see it start to happen to your loved ones because they're basically on your path, and they're just so surprised by it. I love that. Like when the puzzle pieces fall in place, and so I mean that's the. You know what? Hold on, I want to finish this thought I had because maybe you can help me find this guy.
Yeah, I sidetracked you. Go ahead.
The most blissful experience I had during the course of this thing had very little to do with drugs. I was in the middle of the process of making the movie, and I was getting into meditation. So I looked up this guy on the internet, and I found this guy called the Hypnotrist. Okay? Since I found the fucking guy, I haven't been able to find him again. And maybe this will help. this announcement here.
Interesting.
I'm trying to find the HIPAA trip. and I met him. I actually met him in person at a party at Daniel Pinchbeck's, on Daniel Pinchbeck's roof. I'm sitting there. I look up. I'm like, holy shit, there's a guy. And he's very distinct because at the time he wore these like crazy aviator goggles that were like tinted red. Anyway.
Wow. All right, people, if you can find the hypnotist, you got to let me know, and I'll let Dan know. We got to find this guy.
You got to find him, man. You know, where are you, by the way? Where are you at?
I'm in San Diego.
Oh, okay, cool. So anyway, I'm looking on the internet. I find the hypnotist. I start going through this, this breathing exercise with him, meditation breathing exercise. In the nose, cold, and you visualize your third eye as like you close your eyes and you visualize your third eye as kind of like a spinning blue diamond, right? So I'm doing this. I'm breathing in cold, and I'm spinning my blue diamond third eye one way, and then I'm breathing out warm all out of my nose, and you spin the blue diamond the opposite way, right? With the warm air, okay? So it's cold air one way, warm air the other way going out. And are you with me so far?
Yeah, I gotcha.
Okay, cool. So I'm doing this. I don't know how long I'm doing this, maybe like 5-10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And I start to feel my Kundalini energy.
Whoa.
Just rising the fuck up my body. It was so overwhelming. And I maybe had some pot, you know.
Of course.
Earlier that day, you know, like hours before. This is at night. I like woke up in the middle of the night. It's like, I think it was like 4 a.m. or something. And I just wanted to try this thing. And I'm in the dark and I'm doing this. And I feel the energy rising in my body. Totally, it feels like encompassing every single shell of my body, okay? This overwhelming wave of powerful, fucking blissful energy. What I think that it must feel like to go to heaven. I don't know, like you know, when you go into the light, when you go into the white,
yeah,
light or whatever that people talk about, this overwhelming feeling of just love and it felt like a million gallons of heroin. I don't know what the fuck.
Right.
But it's just like, and it was so overwhelming. I couldn't do it for more than 30 seconds. Okay. I had to open my eyes. I had to like shake it off, and it slowly, gradually went down.
Dude,
and
I had a little,
and the guy says, the hypnotist says, now, if you had an experience, you're going to be chasing that for the rest of your life, you know, because now you're going to be looking for it. You know, I didn't know what the fuck to expect, and this thing happened. Like, my chakras aligned, and that was, and I was fucking connected, man. And the feeling was just so overwhelming, and it was better than any fucking drug I've ever had in my life.
Man.
So I think it's worth trying to find this guy again. I look on the internet, I can't find him. But I did meet him at this party at Pinchbeck's on the roof. And I was like, dude, we have to like exchange information. And it just never happened for some reason. And that was like another like weird fucking synchronicity.
Yeah.
You know, and all these things are just tied together. What do you think about that, man? You ever had an experience like that where you had just like overwhelming, blissful, like love energy coursing through your body?
Well, man, I've had some experiences like that on salvia, and I have done DMT, which was also pretty amazing, but I'm kind of spiritually retarded. I cannot get anything out of meditation. I don't seem to, I want to, and I know there's a lot of guys out there I respect, a lot of speakers and guests I've had that are in that wheelhouse, but for me, unless it's induced by some psychedelic, I haven't been able to get there. Maybe I just haven't put enough focus and attention on it, but it's pretty inspiring and interesting to hear you say that, you know, you did it without, it seems like that was, did you have much meditation experience before that, or is that one of your first major attempts?
I honestly think that I was kind of like a natural at it when I was a kid. Like, I think when I was a little kid, I used to just naturally kind of sometimes go into a hypnotic state or meditative state and kind of float around the astral for a little bit, you know.
I didn't have
a lot of control over it. I didn't know what the fuck I was doing, and then I lost control over it over the years. Now,
no one educates us on that stuff.
Yeah, and then as I've gotten back into it, I have crazy fucking dreams, man. But all this is paralleled in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, my character Warren in the movie goes nuts. Obviously, I turned up the dial on his psychoses and neuroses and passion about this particular subject. But, you know, a lot of it is reflected in my life. Obviously, I didn't go off the deep end. I was able to maintain control after going through certain experiences, like, you know, the bliss wave and the fucking, you know, opening up chakras and trying fun psychedelics like acid or ayahuasca or something. You know, this was a huge journey that it was a 3-year journey making this movie, and a lot of stuff happened over the course of it. And I think the other people that were involved in the movie were also, you know, kind of went on this journey with me are in a totally different, peaceful, crazy place now. I mean, you know, I made a lot of great friends on this, like Freeman,
yeah,
who was, you know, an amazing, just a trip just to be around himself. Like,
yeah, he's a blast.
You know, and
I was surprised I didn't want to cut you off, but I was surprised. Yeah, I was really surprised to see Anne Hathaway in that movie. Kind of caught me off guard.
Well, that's what it should do, because, you know, she's a friend of mine, and she did it as a favor, but it's that's what it's meant to do. You know, she the movie, a couple times, you have people like Anne, and you have Josh Duhamel in it, and you have Topher Grace, and Jay Baruchel.
Yeah, he's cool.
And you know, every time, and every time he is cool, and every time you see one of these kind of mainstream people, that's my little way of like breaking the fourth wall, or you know, that's kind of like you know, Hollywood tapping you on the shoulder and saying, yes, this is also seeping into your reality, like, you know. And that's, you know, when Anne shows up in his dream, it's supposed to be kind of shocking. You're like, wait, whoa, what the fuck is going on here?
Yeah.
And I think, yeah, you know, so I think, and then another great moment in the movie is when, this is one of my favorite moments, when Topher makes his appearance. There's a lot of different cameos. Topher Grace makes his appearance, and it's during this, like, very trippy part of the movie where my character has noticed the audience, and I just escaped from an insane asylum, and I'm like, I noticed the audience, and I start talking directly to the audience, like saying, like, what the fuck are you looking at? This is my life you're laughing at. And then during that moment, which is already breaking the fourth wall, we break the fifth wall and have Topher come in as my agent, watching this moment in the movie, just being like, you know, as Anne Fogler's agent, just being like, wow, yeah, I don't know about that choice. We'll see. You know, he wrote it. He wrote the movie, too. So, you know, so I love that fucking
It was good,
movie.
Man. That's a trippy
yeah,
part.
I'm trying to break through, like, see how many walls we can break through in this one moment.
Well, when you see this movie and you see some of those bigger names in it, what shocks me about it is that they would put themselves in a movie with this type of content. You know, Terrence McKenna had a quote saying, like, the more you wake up, the more isolated you become. And I kind of find that it's weird. Like, did you find that this was like a risky choice for your career? Or did any of these people have reservations about being in this type of movie?
Well, obviously they didn't. I mean, we'll see what kind of, you know, we'll see what happens when it comes out and what kind of associations are made. Or maybe people will see that, you know, well, these are mainstream people who are actually delving this world.
Yeah, it'll give them the okay to go on their own journey.
Exactly. So, and that was part of the whole thing with the, you know, giving the sugar with the medicine, because it's, I'm trying to open people's minds to at least just questioning, you know, some of the reality that's presented before us. And I knew that the best way to get it out there was to, you know, get these people in the movie and get some, you know, as they say, you know, everyone cares about the posters, you know, the faces on the poster. And so I knew I had to kind of play in that world in order to get the message out. And they're all amazing people. I mean, they wouldn't have gotten involved. All of them were friends of mine. Just little capsules of situations. Like, I've had, you know, times on Fanboys when I met Jay Baruchel where, you know, we would just go down the conspiracy rabbit hole, you know.
Oh, that's awesome.
You know, just talking. And he's already on that tip, and he can just improvise about that for days. So, you know, he was great in the movie. Annie was, you know, on the front lines at Occupy Wall Street, and you know, that was on CNN, man. Like, she's like out there doing mm-hmm. it. Josh Duhamel, I did Scenic Route with him. There were some nights we were talking about, you know, we were out in Death Valley, and there was a lot of, like, you know, underground military stuff around
there.
Yeah,
underground bases.
Underground bases and bases and mountains. And so there was a lot of talk about that. I was like, oh, this guy is awesome. You know, so then he was in the movie. So, you know, everybody is kind of, and I think it is a universal thing. Like, people are just, you know, they're smart. And they, you know, anyone that could invent the Rubik's Cube and know how to fucking solve it, you know, is out there. And wondering, you know, about the puzzle of the reality that's presented to us, and the layers, the many layers that go beyond what we see. Like, I think about, like, Al Gore was on Letterman, and this is fucking Letterman, man. You know, everyone's watching it.
Yeah.
And Al Gore is asked, so how much do you know about what's going on behind the scenes? You know, you were vice president. You know, how much did you know about what was going on? And he said about 40%.
Okay? 40%.
And 40, yeah.
Wow.
And then, so there's just kind of like a silence of the audience. And Letterman's kind of like shocked for a second. He's just like, whoa, okay. Well, what about the president? How much does he know what's going on behind closed doors? And Al Gore said, oh, about 50%.
Wow.
So I was just like, the fucking president knows 50%.
Yeah, so, just to course, say that, you know, on national TV is pretty bold.
It's pretty damn bold, you know. It's out there. I mean, it's out in our... And that's why I think that it was okay for these particular people to be part of the movie, because I think they take risks anyway with their choices, because they're good actors and they're good artists. And yeah, man, this is a movie that you want to talk about afterward. There's so many movies we see where it just numbs us for 2 hours, and then we leave and we just talk about, like, what kind of fucking, you know, guys want to get dessert. You know, like, that guy, yeah, he was good again. Okay.
Right.
Who wants a taxi? You know, it's like, you know, like, I wanted to make something that made people think, because I was in a perpetual state of thinking about this shit.
Yeah.
Let me
switch gears on you a little bit here. You know, once you wake up to the control grid and the truth about the banking system, at least for me, it was really hard to work a typical job. It was hard to be a cog in the consumerism machine, and the dream became finding a way to make a living of some type of creative endeavor, and now I'm lucky enough that that's happened with this show. I literally quit the corporate world less than 30 days ago, so it's interesting timing to be talking to another artist of sorts who escaped that trap too, but... Yeah. Tell me about, like, the early days of your career. What was the last bullshit job you worked? Where were you ever worried about what you were going to do with your life? How'd you get started in all this?
Yeah, when I got out of college, you know, they don't prepare you. They teach you how to do Shakespeare, you know, they teach you how to do Chekhov, but and they teach you like a million fucking sonnets. But you know, you'll you know, they make you run around in tights. but they do not teach you how to be a good business person and sell yourself because you're selling yourself as you know, that's your commodity. So I got out of college and I like was living at home with my folks. I wasn't sleeping. My eye was twitching because I was getting no sleep, and I was going out on fucking auditions every day, just to like get a. I was non-union, you know, just to get a job to fucking, you know, just to do it. And then I was like, you know, then I started like making stuff with my friends. I was like, all right, we got to make stuff to showcase ourselves. So we would do, you know, Black Box Theater and Mammoth, and then I was like, man, this is like really this is slow going. I had backstage, you know, magazine under my arm. I was going to, you know, non-paying auditions, doing as much indie film as I possibly could. When I got out of college, I did so much student film in college. I was like, I can't do another student film. I just did, after I got out of school, it was just all like anything independent that would pay, you know. So I made certain parameters for myself. I started doing stand-up comedy. Like I think, you know, 99% of the time it was incredibly fun. And then like 1% of the time it fucking sucked. because it's like, it's you against everybody. Like you don't have any allies.
Right.
With your peers. And then I got into improv because that was more like playing with people. You know, the UCB and stuff like that. And then around when I started doing stand-up, that's when I got my manager as my first representation. And that's how you get your foot in the door, because they start to get you like bigger gigs where you can be seen. Like one of the first things I did was, I don't think I got paid. I don't even know if I was union. I think I maybe became union when I did the typo negative video. And so I did that, and then so that started going around. And then I did a lot of theater. So that was like an 8-year long process.
Wow.
Where I was just fucking running around beating the streets trying to get known. And it wasn't until I was, 26 or 27, that I did the Spelling Bee show. We started developing that.
Mm-hmm.
So basically started, a bunch of friends got together and started improvising a fun show and based on a spelling bee. It was all improvised. We created characters and we started performing the show in the Black Box Theater, just like, you know, and you don't know what the fuck's going to catch on. This thing caught on. We did it like several times. People kept coming back. They loved the characters. Finally, you know, Wendy Wasserstein got involved, and then, you know, Bill Finn made it into a musical, and, you know, James Lapine directed it. I mean, that's like, for me, being a fan of theater and musical theater and having done musical theater in high school and like Into the Woods and shit, you know, you have James Lapine directing you. It's like, whoa, okay. This is a dream come true. And that whole process was a dream come true. It just had legs. You know, it went off Broadway. It went to Broadway. I won a Tony Award, and then that was it. I basically, a lot of doors got opened up, and someone said, hey, you want to be in a movie with Chris Walken? I was like, yes.
Yeah, man.
Wear short shorts. Like, you wear short shorts and a shimmery jacket. You still want to do it? Yes. So I was just, you know, I was a kid in a candy store.
Yeah, man. I'm a huge Walken fan. What was that like working with him? Is he pretty cool?
He's brilliant, man. You know, I was a huge fan of him. Anytime I was on set with him, I was just trying to get him to say shit because I just loved to hear him talk. And it took every ounce of my being not to do with my impression of him for him. And he said, I asked him, I was like, dude, what's it like that everybody and your grandma has an impression of you. Like, wherever you go, everyone's going to walk an impression. It's like, I have your impression that I want to do right now, but I won't do it, you know? and he's just like, it's fine, you know? but never do it before a take. And I'd be like, yeah. He's like, it annoys me. He said, Jay Moore. He would do it all the time. He'd do it before a take. I wanted to kill him. You know, I was like, yes, tell me more. And then he had all these amazing stories and I want to, now that I'm making movies, you know, I want to put him in everything. And, you know, he's brilliant.
Yeah, man.
He's a hero.
So, you know, if someone out there, you know, if someone listening is, if it's their dream to be an actor or director, but they're stuck at some shitty job working at Red Lobster or Foot Locker or wherever the fuck, I mean, what's your advice to really get them going? Like, to not give up on that, you know, that creative passion? Because if you give up on it and you just do that bullshit job for like 4 or 5 decades, I mean, what are you living for, really, you know?
Yeah, anytime, like from the actor point of view, whenever my friends are like, man, I'm like, it's tough. I gotta hang up my hat. I gotta get out of it. I always say, like, yeah, man, fucking do it. Go, dude, live life, get life experience, do your fucking thing, because that only adds to your ability if and when you want to come back. And I always bring up George C. Scott, who was fucking in his 50s, was an actor, went to the army, digging ditches, you know, for corpses, and was sitting there just fucking killing himself and said, you know, fuck this, I'm going to go be an actor, and then became one of the greatest actors ever. You know, you just never give up, because it's life.
Yeah.
It's just life. Life is... that's just how it is. And every single one of your favorite people were there at some point in their life. They were sitting behind some fucking, you know, desk that they didn't want to be at, or some fucking grill that they didn't want to fucking be at, and talking to the man. And that only fueled them to become who they are. And so just fucking use it. It's just the way it is. And, you know, I've had a lot of ups and downs on my journey here, and I wouldn't take back any of it. It makes you, it gives you character.
Yeah.
And, it's
definitely tough. I mean, a lot of people feel trapped under debt, you know, living paycheck to paycheck. They just got to keep treading water. And to take the time to go into some creative endeavor almost seems just too daunting, too overwhelming. I mean, things are pretty fucked.
Yeah. Well, so then, I mean, that's a story worth telling. And write about yourself. Make the next Clerks. You know, and check it out. There's no excuse. You got a fucking camera in your phone. You know,
like, touche. Yeah, they didn't have that back in the day.
No, man. There's cameras everywhere, and they're cheap. And you could make the next great documentary, like, in your spare time while you're working, if you have the passion. But it's like, man, it's like making a film, it's like birthing a baby. It's very exhausting, and you have to be able to have that endurance to go the distance to complete something, because each one is a fucking, it's a trip. And simply because it's creative second and business first a lot of the time when you're trying to make these things.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't want to get all Entertainment Tonight on you, but I like fanboys, and you seem like a Star Wars fan. I mean, how do you feel about these new Star Wars movies? I wonder, the way things are in this country, I hope we can see the new Star Wars trilogy before everything collapses.
Oh yeah. I think we'll be okay. I think we'll be okay. I think we'll get at least 7 in. Number 7.
Well, that's good.
But fuck, man, I want to be in it. Yeah. I want to be in that. I think J.J. Abrams is awesome.
He is.
I'd settle just to be like the voice of a droid or something. I don't give a shit. I'd like to be Dan Solo. I'd like to be, you know, Han's cousin or some shit. But
if you had that Samuel L. Jackson clout, you could choose your own lightsaber color. You could do all that shit.
Yeah, man. I'd throw some weight around. I'd just get crazy with it. Get a couple blasters.
Yeah, get a couple blasters. I was talking to my buddy Kyle, who appears on the show sometimes, about why we like the originals and why we think they're much more interesting than the prequels. And he made a great point about the Jedis. You know, in the original trilogy, the Jedis are like mystics and Zen gurus that harness a special energy force. They're almost like shamanistic. But in the prequels, they're basically just soldiers in a war and policemen. And they lost that esoteric edge that made them so interesting. I thought that really nailed it.
I see what you're getting at. In the prequels, they're like the soldiers, they're pawns, they're being manipulated. Yeah, but then, you know, the introduction to them with the middle three that we love so much, they are, you know, they're the war is over, and you know, they're monks. And it is more of a mystical, also because they didn't have the special effects, you know. They were, you know, it's like, I don't think we can get Obi-Wan to do that slip. The wires are giving. Let's
just give him some cool lines and call it a day.
Yeah, exactly. Let him just say some Buddhist shit, and we'll bring in Yoda over here, and we'll just have Luke running around and getting all sweaty and shit. And all swampy, and maybe we'll have him meditating. We won't explain it. I don't want to explain the force. It just is, right?
Right.
Why do you got to explain it? Yeah, and then exactly. So then, in the prequel, they just explain everything away. Oh, it's the midichlorians. Right. Ah, you have an overwhelming amount of midichlorians.
Well, it's actually kind of funny, because there's a constant battle between like science versus mysticism. And that first trilogy had something special in it. And then they basically came and like you said, they overexplained everything. They let science take over.
Yeah.
And they really took out the deeper messages that I thought were in those movies.
Yeah, there was more of a, you know, we had more of a mysticism and fantasy in general, you know, point of view in general back in the 80s. And then as the prequels, you know, came in there, the technology was changing. And, you know, you felt like you could hug Chewbacca. Like, you can go and take some shots at Chewbacca, you know.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, then you have all the CGI in the prequels, you know, there's no tangibility. And you feel very standoffish. You feel very separated from it. So you know, the acting, you know, they needed Harrison Ford. You know, Harrison Ford. If they had Harrison Ford, maybe it would have been okay. Everything would have been salvaged. But you know, it's the chemistry, man. It's the real life chemistry that makes those movies worth watching. And I love Ewan McGregor.
Yeah, he was great.
But yeah, and I love many of the aspects of it. I liked the third one. I liked him turning into Darth. I thought that was cool. And actually, Topher Grace made a version where he took a little bit of the first one, a lot of the second one, and a lot of the third one, and made one movie out of it, and it's fucking brilliant.
Really?
I've seen it. Yeah. That's a movie worth watching. It's like action from head to toe, and it totally takes out, you know, the little kid, and really makes it more about, you know, basically it's a mirror of Luke's journey, except it's in the opposite direction, and it's fucking great.
That's cool.
So, so if you can see that at some point in your life, you can hunt that down.
Yeah. That and the hypnotrist.
Yeah, we got to find the hypnotrist. That's been tricky. He's been tricky. But I don't know. I totally recommend. I mean, I can make a phone call to Topher for you if you want to see it.
Yeah, I gotta.
What year? What the hell? What time is it? What the fuck is going on?
It's 11:56. I was just about to say we are about done here.
Wow,
that was the good hour. Time. Yeah, the hour kind of flew by, man.
That's good, man. It was good talking to you.
Yeah, thanks for doing this. You know, I had a great time. Thanks for sharing Don Peyote with me. Thanks for making the movie, shining a light on the conspiracy movement. Not many people are doing that. Drawing some attention to Pinchback's work, also a noble cause. Where can people see the movie? It's not out yet, right?
No, it's going to be out in May in select movie theaters. And it's going to be on VOD right before then. And so it's coming up soon in the springtime.
Nice. Well, good deal, Dan. You're a pimp and a gentleman. Thanks again for doing this. Thanks for making the movie. And hopefully, you know, we've inspired some people to quit those day jobs and live a more creative path. And hopefully that movie inspires some people to hop down the rabbit hole if they haven't already, you know?
Right on, man. Absolutely. Let's do it.
All right.
Let the Don Peyote revolution begin.
Cool, man. Well, thanks again. Take care of yourself.
Okay, you too, buddy.
There you have it, people. No startling revelations about reptilians in the White House or the lost city of Atlantis, but just some good stoner fun. And I think it's important to support any opportunity to put the conspiracy world in the mainstream, and I hope you agree and decide to check out the movie. We all know money talks, and if we support ventures like Don Peyote and THC, then more alternative media can exist. And we might get a little more crazy conspiracy and a little less about last night. And that's a world that I'd be happy to live in. Your move, Tyler Perry.
Kuzumo Sespa in my DeLorean. War's over, I'm a piece of Mandalorian. The story is stumped, Star Wars historians deep in debate, but they play at Benegans. Rhyme renegade, show to penetrate. First and second defense, I won't hesitate. Got a job to do when Darth's the guy that delegates. Got something against Skywalker, someone he really hates. I don't give a fuck, I'm after Solo. For all I carry, could be hiding at Yoda's dojo. Gotta make the money, credit's no good when a Jawa's run a shop in your neighborhood. Think you can cook, I got a grappling hook. Let's make this quick, cause I'm really booked. I'm a devious degenerate defender of the devil, shoving all the trash compactors on the detention level. My backpacks got jets. Well, I'm Boba, the vet. Well, I bounty hunt for Jabba Hutt to finance my vet. Well, I chill in deep space. A mask is over my face. Well, I deliver the prize, but I still narrow my eyes, cause my time I don't like to waste. Get down! I'm a question, rep inside Enigma. Get inside a slave one, find your home and signal. From Endor to Hoth, Ridley to Spock. I'll find what you want, but there's gonna be a cost. Say, my name is Boba Fett. I know my shit is tight. Start acting right, yo, frozen a carbonite. Got telescopic sight, flame throwers on my wrist. You still don't get the gist. Spike boots have made a kick. Talk is made a hit. You think I give a shit? Your mama is a bitch. I see you in the Sarlacc pit. You just flipped my switch. Integrity's been ditched. You scratching on my itch. You know I shoot again. I got the bean and second teenage way to lick my lefty lip. So I'll let you get back inside your little spaceship. Give you a head start, cause I'm a sporting con. Consider the starting line and sneaky smile. Hide inside, hope you have hyperdrive. Pray to stay alive. Don't try to slip me five, cause I never take a bribe. To the beat of a different drummer. Baddest bunny hunter. Let no man put us under or else be put under as in 6 feet. Got an imperial fleet backing me up. Gonna blow up any attempt to defeat. They got a death star. Got full payments on my car. Handed over to Hammerhead at most I see bar. Used to carjack him. He's a bar back. Just go to show how you can get back on the right track. As for me, that's not an option. Can't say that with more clarity. Me going legit would be like Jar Jar with speech therapy. My backpacks got jets. Well, I'm Boba, the vet. Well, I bounty hunt for Jabba Hutt to finance my vet. Will I chill in deep space? A mask is over my face. Will I deliver the prize? But I still narrow my eyes, cause my time I don't like to waste. Get down! I stay open like a tauntaun, faster than the Autobahn. On a motorbike, I'm trying to do the deed, I'm living gone. Jabba has a hidden fit, contact Corinthian. Overcoat the plan, I'm focused on politics, it's legit. Back in the day when I was a slave, living life in a fast lane, like in a pod race. Mean streak tweak, that became a best in case. So the space age, put that place post haste. Took up a noble cause, called a Clone Wars. Lifestyle all about girls and cars. Getting fucked up and fucked up bars. See, I'm not a retard, or gay like the barge. I'm large and in charge with a face so scarred.